Guys, we got a great conversation today with our friend Scott Leimbrink here on Sports Spectrum, former Major League Baseball pitcher, 12 seasons in the big leagues with the Giants, Astros, Padres, Brewers, White Sox, and the Atlanta Braves. He had a 1.83 ERA in 2005, 2.14 in 2004, and he was the setup pitcher for Trevor Hoffman, the Hall of Famer. That's Scott Leimbrink. He's also the host of the Get in the Game podcast, which is here on the Sports Spectrum Podcast Network. It debuted back in 2021. Scott has had Dude Perfect on his podcast. We're going to talk about that. Paul Goldschmidt, Dave Roberts, Albert Pujols are just a few of the big-time guests that Scott has had on his podcast. So if you're not subscribed to Get in the Game, go do that. It comes out every other Thursday, and it's a perfect complement if you like this show. So go subscribe to the Get in the Game podcast. Scott Leimbrink is our guest. We're going to talk about his work that he does with Water Mission. If you don't know about Water Mission, they provide access to safe water, sanitation, and hygiene solutions for people in developing countries and disaster areas. They are a Christian ministry, and you can join in providing safe water for the 2.2 billion people who are still in need by checking out their website, watermission.org, watermission.org. It's always great to have Scott Leimbrink back on Sports Spectrum, the former MLB pitcher. He's now with Water Mission as a brand ambassador, but you probably know the name if you know about Sports Spectrum as the host of the Get in the Game podcast on the Sports Spectrum Podcast Network. Hello, Mr. Leimbrink. Good to see you, my friend.
Good to see you, too, and it's good to be on a podcast where I didn't have to prepare a thing. I just show up and talk.
Just show up and talk, yeah. I'll do the interviewing, and you be the guest, and then, you know, on Thursdays every other week, people can listen to you interview other people in that form. So this will be good.
And what they don't see in those podcasts is me sweating behind the microphone going, oh, gosh, what if I ask a bad question right here? What if we run out of things to talk about?
Well, I'll say you've been doing this for a couple of years now, and you haven't run out of things to talk about, and I don't think you've asked a really bad question, so that's a good sign. In fact, I'll start here. You just had Dude Perfect on a couple of weeks ago. It's going to be re-airing for those that haven't had a chance to listen to it right here on the Sports Spectrum podcast, but you got a chance to go to Dude Perfect's headquarters, sit down with them, meet a couple of the guys, Tyler and Garrett, and what was that experience like for you? That was probably the biggest step? I mean, you've had Albert Pujols on your show. You've had Andy Pettit. You've had Dave Roberts. You've had some big names. But Dude Perfect is at a different level and, in many cases, at another level.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I met those guys about 4 years ago. I was actually on a hunt with some other former baseball players. And some of those guys had met Garrett and Tyler through another circumstance and found out that there was a mutual love for hunting. And so they invited these guys on our trip and they were telling me about who was coming. And I'm like, Dude Perfect. I've never heard of that. And sadly enough, I did not know anything about it. Now I have teenage kids and they showed me all about what Dude Perfect does. And I love their show. But more importantly, these guys are just on fire for the Lord and using their platform. And I think it's, you know, very much related to what pro athletes who love Jesus are doing is as we often hear at PAO, we're not athletes having a Christian experience. We're Christians having an athletic experience.
Yes.
And that's how these guys see their role. They just really want to use the platform that God's given them to give back in a way of sharing testimonies, sharing their faith. And I mean, their audience is perfect. It's the youth of America. And when we think about the messages that people are hearing out there, these guys are just a perfect combatant to some of the confusion and the identity issues that are coming about because of mixed messaging.
Yeah.
And they're just giving a really clear, great message.
And they're on tour right now. And you mentioned the message. So they do their show. And then at the end, they talked about this when Tyler was talking about this with you. They are intentional about sharing the gospel at the end of every single live event that they do. You talk about using your platform to glorify God. That to me, and it's always invitational, you know, in a way that they do it. They don't kind of sneak it in there. They say, okay, the show is over, but if you'd like to hang out at the end and hear what's most important to us, and most people stay around because it's Dude Perfect, and then they share the gospel. Like, how great is that?
That was the thing that I was most impressed about was their humility in that. They did not want it to be a bait and switch. They wanted the people that were paying to come see the trick shots and the show to be there and be fully satisfied. And then at the end of the show, they would give the invitation. If you want to stick around, we're going to talk more about this. And here's what we're talking about.
Yes.
And they said the first time they did it, they were really nervous about it. They were worried about what's this going to look like from our image standpoint. I mean, they've got a lot of brand ambassadors out there that are elevating their brand. And so they didn't want to mess with any of that. But at the same time, they really felt compelled to do this. And when they came back out, they said virtually everybody was still there. And then they proceeded to tell some amazing stories about kids that came up to them after they shared and talked about that they had given their life to Christ, talked about what it meant, you know, to see these guys as icons in the entertainment industry, fully let down their guard and be completely vulnerable.
It reminds me of a book I read called Halftime, which, interestingly enough, I read about 42 years old when I was 42, and it was
Bob
perfect.
Buford.
Yes, you know the book, Bob Buford.
Absolutely.
And it's called From Success to Significance, and it reminds me of that with Dude Perfect has all this success, you know, 60 million people following them. I think it's 60 million subscribers or some ridiculous number like that. It might even be more than that on YouTube. And, you know, billions and billions of views, huge amounts of fans. They'll pack arenas this summer as they're on tour. And yet you can have all the success in the world, but what's the significance? You know, what's the purpose behind what you're doing? And it feels like there's nothing wrong with the success, by the way, but it feels like they're at a point, and I sense that when you talk to them, Scott, that they're in their purpose stage or their significant stage of this journey because they don't want to waste this opportunity that they have and not just make a lot of money and, you know, get a lot of fans, but to do something greater for the kingdom.
That's right. You know, and they're only third time in, right? They're like in their young 30s or early 30s. So the fact that they're doing this now is pretty incredible. I wanted to tell this quick story because I thought this, you know, was very representative of maybe what you hear about from other youth. But my little nephew, Fletcher, he's 9 years old, and he loves Dude Perfect. And so I was with him shortly after I did this interview, and I said, "Hey, Fletch, you want to hear this chance that I got to sit down and talk to Dude Perfect?" And so I, you know, I'm just thinking that he's already like getting what I'm saying, that I did this podcast. And
yeah,
so I'm playing it for him. I had it recorded on my phone. I got about halfway through the interview and he stops and he looks at me and he goes, "Wait a minute. You mean to tell me that Dude Perfect is real? Those guys, those are real guys?" He thought that because this was something that he sees on TV, on YouTube, like that's not really real.
It's like superheroes.
So, yeah, exactly. So now the fact that he's putting this story in with a real person, amazing. And I just think about, you know, wow, how cool that he's processing that and thinking, man, these are just regular dudes, real guys that are, you know, real stories, and they're sharing them with me.
That's awesome. I love that. Scott Leinbrink is with us, the host of Getting the Game podcast on Sports Spectrum's podcast network. He's also a brand ambassador with Water Mission, and Water Mission is who this podcast is presented by, providing access to safe water and sanitation and hygiene solutions. Watermission.org is their website. We're going to talk a lot about Water Mission and the work that you're doing, Scott, and the work they're doing in just a moment, but the draft's coming up, the MLB draft. And I thought, you know what? You were a second rounder back in the day, 1997, by the Giants out of Texas State University. Also the alum of Paul Goldschmidt, who you had on your podcast recently as well. But what I thought would be good to just talk about that day. Like, second round is kind of a big deal. So you probably know, or maybe your agent's telling you at that time, that you're going to go pretty high here. What were you hearing? What was that day like preparing? And then what were you actually doing when you got that call?
Well, I did not have the typical path to, you know, a lot of guys that maybe got drafted in the early rounds maybe had known about that for a while. Maybe some of them had been drafted in high school and then chose to go to college. I did not have that path. I snuck through high school, barely had a chance to play, luckily walked on at an NAIA school. So I had a real underdog story, and then really started to come into my own my junior year. So really right at the right time that I was eligible for the draft. And we had scouts showing up. I actually transferred from that NAIA school to a Division I school, mm-hmm. Texas State.
Yeah,
it was Southwest Texas State, by the way. So Goldie is by far the most famous person from Texas State.
Yes.
But I still hold the title, I think, for Southwest Texas.
That's right. They changed the name. They couldn't have it be Southwest Texas once you left, Scott. That was the deal.
But yeah, we had a great team that year, and we actually surprised a lot of people. I mean, we were playing with a lot of the big Southwest Conference schools. I'm dating myself now, so we were playing the Texas and the A&Ms and Baylors,
Yeah.
and we were beating them, and we actually made it to a regional. Now, this is before even the super regional format, so we won our conference tournament. We went to the regional. We paired up with Texas Tech University on the first night. They had three All-Americans on that team. And we came in and surprised them, beat them in the ninth inning. And there was a lot of scouts there to see those All-Americans, and invariably they ended up seeing some of us. And so that's really where, some of us got put on the map was really late in the year. We ended up getting beat that year by Rice, and Rice went on to the College World Series. But it was really a whirlwind for me. I did not know. I mean, I had an idea that I might get drafted, but could have been later rounds, could have been middle rounds, might not have been first day. So when the day came, I did not want to be just waiting around by the phone. I didn't want to, maybe thinking that the phone would ring and it didn't, and then having the disappointment. So I said, I'm not even going to be distracted by that. Me and my buddies are going to go play golf. And so we're playing golf, and this is before cell phones even. So
Yes, yeah.
I'm out on the golf course. I'm not getting any updates. And we make the turn, and I said, you know what? I'm going to go in the clubhouse and call home on a landline and just see if anything's happened. My curiosity was killing me. I call home, and my mom is the first one to answer the phone, and she's just screaming. And I'm thinking, well, something good must have happened. And she said, you must be the 50th person to find out that you got drafted in the second round by the San Francisco Giants. And so, of course, I get to share that news with my buddies there at the golf course, and I don't think I didn't play well at all at the turn, because I was so focused on,
Oh my gosh.
what next steps looked like. But
Second
yeah.
round, Scotty. I mean, think about this too. Like most people who might get drafted in those second, third rounds, they're not playing golf. I mean, today you'd have a cell phone if you were, but
Yeah.
you just said, I'm good. I'm going out and I'm going to have a good time with my buddies.
Yeah. Because really, I mean, it may have not even come until the next day. So,
True. Yeah.
yeah. So I didn't want to, put too much pressure on myself. That was kind of something that I had grown accustomed to, is, mitigate the expectations a little bit, and not hope for too much, and be pleasantly surprised when something big does happen. That's kind of the way I lived my career up to that point, and I think in a lot of ways the way I live my life now.
Yeah. Just make sure you bring a cell phone next time, right? Like, I'm just imagining our mutual friend Matt Holliday, and it's, the day Jackson was getting drafted, they were at their house, by the way, all the cameras and Scott Boras and all this other stuff. But just imagine if Jackson was like, I'm just gonna go play golf. Just, shoot me a text if I get drafted.
Well, and now they actually invite the guys like on location. I mean, they're in LA
Yes.
or they're in Las Vegas, wherever they're hosting the draft. So,
Yes.
yeah, it was a very different experience for me.
That's awesome. Now, when you're coming into the big leagues, you came in and made your debut in 2000, last appearance in 2011. So you played 11 years in the big leagues. Who was the toughest guy that you faced, or maybe not even the toughest guy, but the most memorable big name guy that you faced, where you were like, oh, this is like, was it like somebody like Barry Bonds, that maybe you
Well,
faced early, late in his career, somebody like that?
yeah, Barry, and so Barry was a teammate actually when I first got called
That's
up.
right, of
And
course.
then going a couple teams later to the Padres, we saw our fair share of the Giants, and that was, I mean, right in the middle. Those years that I was with the Padres was 03 to 07.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that was right in there when he was hitting all the home runs, and I mean, you'd go into Pac Bell Park or AT&T, whatever it is now. And you'd walk in there, and I mean, the place would just go absolutely nuts whenever he would come to the plate. So, he was always a guy that he was the one guy that wasn't going to beat you.
Right.
And you
Yeah.
always had one of those on each team. But I think he, more than ever, more than any other player, was like that one defining guy that just, he seemed like he was bigger than the game. And the guy flat didn't miss. I mean, I remember one time we played an entire series, and he saw three pitches to hit. Two of them he hit out of the park, and the third one he fouled straight back. It was probably a fraction of an inch from being a home run itself. So, I mean, this guy was just otherworldly.
Yeah.
So definitely he was one of those guys that I typically, if I came in, it was probably the seventh or eighth inning, and it was a close ball game, so we were walking him anyway.
Right.
But I did get a chance to to go at him a couple of times, and he did get me one time, and I got him one time. So
there you go.
So we kind of had a back and forth. Yeah.
Yeah. He had like 200 and some walks that 2004 year. I read his stats recently, and it was 130 or something like that intentional walks.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. He got walked intentionally walked with the bases loaded.
Yes, I remember that. Wasn't that Buck Showalter who did that?
There it was. Yeah.
I'll never forget that. Well, you got to face some really cool guys like Albert Pujols. I'm thinking of Griffey Jr. I'm thinking of, you know, we mentioned Barry. I mean, who are some of the other guys that come to mind? Maybe two or three other guys that you remember.
Edgar
facing?
Martinez.
Yeah.
Ichiro. You know, John Olerud. I know I'm listing a bunch of Mariners for some reason.
That's okay.
Barry Larkin, Hall of Famer.
Did you face Piazza? Yeah. Probably Mike Piazza.
Piazza, yeah. And Piazza was also a teammate. Jim Thome.
Yeah.
So there were some big guys in there.
Yeah. You faced it's a really interesting time to be playing, too, that 2000 to 2011 time frame in the big leagues. I'm just thinking about a guy like Shohei Ohtani right now, right? Yeah. And when you watch him, like, you were a good pitcher. He's dominating as a starting pitcher and playing every day and basically the best hitter in baseball and one of the best pitchers in baseball. I mean, can you have imagined being him, much less facing him? I don't know if you were, I'm guessing you were a hitter at some point, whether it was in high school or even a little bit in college, but to be at that level in the big leagues and be doing what he's doing.
It's just incredible. Yeah. You know, I think about what I can shed light on is maybe what a lot of people don't see is how much time is put in your craft behind the scenes.
Yes.
And when I look at the time that starting pitchers put in, I mean, everybody says, oh, it's the greatest job in the world. They only work 1 out of 5 days. Man, those guys are busting their tail every other day. They're busting their tail the day that they go to work that everybody sees them. But they've got a regimen every other day, too. And they spend hours out there training, weightlifting, cardio, treatment, you know, everything that's required to get ready for their next start. Hitters, same thing. I mean, anytime you see a hitter, if they're not out on the field hitting, they're going to the cage or they're looking at film. There's just a ton of work that it takes to be good at that level, much less to be one of, if not the best. And to be doing that at both as a hitter and a starting pitcher, I don't know how this guy has enough hours in the day unless he's just been given the Midas touch that he rolls out of bed and hits home runs and punches people out.
It feels like that's what it is. We both know you playing and me having been around athletes enough that it's not, there's so much that goes into preparing yourself to be at that level. Nobody just rolls out of bed. You know, Barry Bonds just didn't roll out of bed and hit home runs. Like, he would work at it and he was doing the best that he could to be as good as he is. Guys like Paul Goldschmidt that you just talked to on your podcast, same thing. Did you ever have an at-bat in the big leagues, by the way, as a relief pitcher?
I had a few. I was actually a starting pitcher for about 5 minutes.
5 minutes, okay.
No, it was longer than that. I think I had 6 starts with the Astros.
Okay, so you had at-bats during those games.
I did. Most of them I struck out.
Did you ever get a hit?
I got a few hits. I actually got more hits as a reliever than I did as a starter.
Oh, okay.
Got a hit the very first at-bat in the big leagues, which was my rookie year, and it was one of those blowout games, and they sent me back out there, and I was facing Jimmy Anderson, a lefty, soft-slinging lefty from Pittsburgh, and he threw me this little sinker away. And I just, you know, dinked it over the first baseman's head for a base hit. And I thought, man, I should quit now.
Yes, never again, but, right?
Unfortunately, they made me do it again. And but I think I did hit over 200 for my career. So
okay, that's good.
Yeah. I thought one time I got Mark Pryor. We were facing the Cubs. I was with Houston at the time. And I said, man, as soon as I see that guy's arm, I'm just going to start swinging. And, you know, the lucky thing is, you know, back then, starting pitchers couldn't hit. So you were usually going to be seeing two or three, you know, pretty meatball fastballs, you know, because that's definitely one guy that you don't want to waste pitches on. So I said, as soon as I see his arm, I'm swinging. And I caught this fastball out front and hit it toward the Crawford boxes, and I hit it a mile high. And I see Moises Alou going back up against the wall, and he just looks up, and I thought, man, I got it. And at the last second, he just put his glove up and caught it.
You didn't bat flip or anything, right? Just throw the
bat. Oh,
no.
No.
Okay. Yeah. I'm just checking. Yeah. That's amazing. That's a great story. Yeah, it's just an interesting time now, too, right? There's no pitchers hitting anymore, unless you're Shohei Ohtani. you know, everybody else, all the pitchers are just kind of doing their thing, and you got the DH now. So,
well, let's not forget about our buddy Wainwright. Now, Wainwright can turn the ball around.
He can, but he's not batting. They're not. It's not like they're putting him in at the DH on his.
That's true. Yeah.
On his off day.
Right.
So,
yeah.
I mean,
and I know he was really upset about that too. So I'm going to speak for him.
Yes. Oh, I don't doubt that. We have to have him back on, or you have to have him back on your show, even in the off season when he's finished playing, and hear some more stories about the hitting prowess of one Adam Wainwright. I'm sure he'd love to share about that. Scott Leinbrink's with us here on Sports Spectrum. He's the host of Get in the Game, the podcast that debuted back in March of 2021. You need to go listen to Scott's show. And of course, he's here with Water Mission. He's their brand ambassador. And I really want to pivot the conversation to Water Mission, Scott. When you're thinking about the work that they're doing right now, I just love what they're about, providing safe water, sanitation, hygiene solutions. But tell us about a little bit about, you know, what they've been doing lately. They sort of have a new focus with this Living Water program. Share with us a little bit about what's happening with Water Mission.
Sure. So there's so many different ways that you can serve people when it comes to water. And I think what I run into oftentimes is a lot of people think that we're just handing out bottled water. That is not a sustainable solution. And nor is, you know, some of these other solutions that might be a temporary stopgap to provide temporary access, or maybe there's no attention being paid to the quality of the water source. It's more about accessibility. So really what Water Mission has done is taken a systematic approach to a lot of different scenarios too. So when you think about where we're operating in developing countries. One of the contexts is in the community development context. So we would come into a community. We would develop permanent infrastructure, which would include drilling a well, putting in treatment equipment, providing access, providing training, hand washing and hygiene training. We're putting in latrines to stop the cycle of contamination of the water source. So, you know, that takes months to do something like that. In another scenario, we're coming into a disaster area. It might be an earthquake. It might be a hurricane where the water source has been compromised. And we're trying to put in infrastructure that can provide access to water immediately. So we're talking hours that we can put in this equipment, start serving water, have temporary access points where people can come and get water, take it back to their homes. Then the third context would be the refugee context. And right now, we have over 100 million refugees throughout the country, or throughout the world, I'm sorry. So it's the largest in the history of the world. You think about even back in World War II, you know, entire countries being forced out of their homes because of violence. But it's not just violence. It's not just natural disasters. It's persecution. So there's people that are not able to live at home, and they're forced to have some kind of temporary existence. We need to serve them too. But the fact of the matter is, in refugee camps in Africa, the average stay is 17 years. So we're not just talking about, you know, somebody pitching a tent for a few months and then going back home. Some people are growing up in refugee camps. And so we need to kind of have a hybrid model there where we are providing immediate access to water, but we're then also developing that water source and transitioning it to a more permanent infrastructure where it can serve them for a number of years.
Watermission.org is the website. You've been on location a lot, right? Seeing the work that Water Mission does in these developing countries, these areas that you just described. What's some of those things that you've seen that can give, you know, people who are listening a real idea of the work that's being done? I remember when I went to the Dominican Republic with our friends at Compassion, you know, I saw what was happening in, you know, in the villages with Compassion, and it moved me in a way that I'd never seen before. I know that that happens with Water Mission. What are some of the examples, or maybe one example that you've seen when you've been there and you've seen this actual work on the ground, you know, taking effect?
Yeah, I'm so glad you got that experience, Jason. And I would say for anybody thinking about taking an experience, a trip like that, do it. It's a life changer. I think about the first time that my wife and I went to Haiti, and this was before I ever worked for Water Mission. We were partners with them. We were financially supporting their work, and we got invited to go and see. And the thing that I noticed first and foremost was there was an immediate difference between communities that had water and those who didn't. I mean, I could literally see it The kids, I mean, you know, when you drink bad water, it's not just, it's a health concern. It's not just things that you can't see, but it's things like skin ailments. You know, water impacts so many other aspects too. You can't have good medical care. You can't have a functioning clinic if you don't have safe water. People are literally going to the hospital and getting waterborne illnesses.
Right.
Like that, that just, you know, was mind-boggling to me. So when you think about, you know, we can do this at such a foundational level and then elevate all these other social endeavors, whether it's, you know, medical, whether it's education, whether it's housing, all of those are going to be benefited by a good water and sanitation system. So that's where I really fell in love with this, is that if we can start here at the base level, now we can provide a foundation that all of these other social initiatives can build off of. And then when I also saw that this was a Christian ministry, they're not just engineers, but they're out there sharing Jesus with every project.
Yes.
And you did, you mentioned the fact that we got a renewed focus on that. We call it our Living Water Program. Mm. And, basically just in the same way that we've taken a real systematic approach to the engineering and the water infrastructure, we want to do the same thing with elevating the local church. That's really our center focus. How can we equip and train those pastors and leaders that are in those communities that are going to be disciple makers to do that even better? How can we use specific moments throughout the water project where we're mobilizing the community to come in and learn about health and hygiene and what safe water does for a community? How can we take that opportunity to talk about Jesus as the living water? The two are just intrinsically connected. And so I love the way Water Mission is doing this. We're measuring the outputs. We're measuring impact. And we're looking at always, how can we do our job even better? How can we be more efficient in delivering safe water and living water?
Yeah, the living water of Jesus. That's why I love Water Mission. I mean, listen, when you're, what is it, 2.2 billion people who are still in need of water? Does that sound right?
That's right. Yep.
When you're thinking about that, obviously, your heart breaks for the people who can't just grab a cup like you and I just did and take a sip out of our Yetis, my Yeti, and take a drink of water. 2.2 billion without safe water. But then to know that there's a whole of people who don't even know about the living water, don't know about Jesus. And to be able to put those two together, that's why I love our partnership. I love that Sports Spectrum and even Pro Athletes Outreach and Water Mission can all kind of come together, because our goal is the gospel ultimately. I mean, you can have all the water you want, but if you don't know Jesus, it's not good. So using this opportunity to help people, to serve people, but also to give them the real water that matters most, which is, like you said, the living water. That's what I love about Water Mission.
That's right. We often say relief without a cure is just a partial solution. So if we help them just for this present world, then we're only doing them a partial service. But if we can give them hope for eternity, then we can use that temporary solution to create hope for what they're going to experience in the afterlife.
Say that again. Relief without a cure
is just a partial solution.
Partial solution. I like that. That makes so much sense. I did hear about this program you have in Uganda and that you've been able to go there. Can you share a little bit about that experience?
Yeah, back in 2019, way back pre-COVID, if anybody can remember that.
so many years ago, right?
Yeah. We took a group of guys, a couple of former Major League players, Jason Standridge and Blaine Boyer, joined me on that trip with some of our other partners. And we actually got to go into a couple of different of the refugee camps in northern Uganda. And it was such an impactful trip. I remember sitting down a couple of days with these women, and you know, most of the 85% of the people that are in a refugee camp are women and children, and hearing their stories. And most of these refugees had come from South Sudan. And so this was after the civil war broke out in 2016. Basically, the dictator turned his own military on his own people, and people were fleeing with whatever they could grab. And they were spending weeks traveling across the African wilderness, trying to get to the border on foot, and then being picked up with UN buses and shuttled to these refugee settlements. And they had been there, you know, ever since then. And I remember Mary, this one refugee that we met, and her story was so impactful. Her husband was actually killed in that flight. She had two children that now were experiencing PTSD. And, you know, just all of the things that she had been through. And I thought, you know, now here's a woman that has an excuse to really just lose hope. And you would think that, you know, she was downcast as she's telling these stories. She was sharing it. And of course, it was very serious. But then she would always follow up with, but I know that I have a God who strengthens me, who gives me faith, and I have hope because of him. And she, her face would just light up with this wonderful smile. And it was really impactful for me because I thought about all the ways that we, you know, we talk about first world problems and, you know, the things that we all face, and not to, to minimize those. But I think if we keep them in perspective in light of the hope that we have for eternity and knowing that all of the things that we face here are just temporary trials, that if we truly have the hope of Christ in our hearts, we know that this world is as bad as it gets.
Yeah.
And we've got something waiting for us, the promises of God that are just going to be fantastic. And it's going to make all of this suffering worthwhile.
Yeah. That's a great story. I know you're planning another trip too. This is what I love about Water Mission is they partner with so many different organizations, and even people listening can be a partner. I'm a partner, you know, I financially sow into the ministry every month. But you're working with baseball players that you said you went down to Uganda. You're doing another trip to Mexico in the fall, right?
We are. Yeah, we've actually we did this trip last year too and had a great time. We had five guys go down that were all Spanish speakers. Nice. Three of them were actually from Mexico. And so I'm going down there as a trip leader and I don't speak the same language. And in a lot of ways, you know, I was having these guys that were down there train and teach me.
And translate, of course.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so it was a great trip. You know, these trips are fun from a standpoint of, you know, seeing the work of Water Mission. They're tremendous opportunities for fellowship and discipleship and just relationship building. We had a ton of fun together. We're staying in a hotel and we're going out each day. And they're long days, you know, a lot of hours in the car, a lot of hot days. But we're getting a chance to, you know, in one community, we did a baseball clinic. And so we're with kids from a school and we're teaching them how to hit and throw and catch. And they love hearing our stories. In another community, you know, we got to stand up in front of a church and some of the guys shared their faith testimony.
Wow.
We're praying with people. It's, you know, we do some cultural experiences too. We got to go to a coffee plantation, have some of the best coffee I've ever had and see this wildflower farm. So it's really an enriching experience because you enjoy this with other people that you're with. You see the service that's being done for the country that you're in. And you also get to experience some cultural things that make you really appreciate these people. Because I think, you know, if we are going to serve, we need to appreciate how God has uniquely designed and gifted them and appreciate their culture. And it's not about going down there and teaching them how to become Americans or giving them solutions, you know, why they can't do it the way we do it. But really, there's a brokenness on both sides. There's a brokenness that we go down there that we carry, and there's a brokenness that they have that might manifest itself a little bit differently.
Yeah.
But when we can come together and we can experience God's healing and restoration together, it's really a special thing.
That's awesome. Watermission.org is the website. People can go learn more and definitely check out how to get involved with Water Mission. Scott Limebrink is the brand ambassador there. He's also a former Major League Baseball pitcher. By the way, did you ever get the ball, the hit that you got, that first hit?
Oh, yeah.
You got the ball, right?
It's right over here.
Oh, I hope so. I hope so. I mean, I'd be like, that would be the one I'm getting, right? Your first major, because pitchers don't get a lot of hits, so you're getting that ball.
I got the ball and the bat. Nice. So the bat is funny because I was a relief pitcher. I was a rookie. I didn't have my own bats. So I literally found out I was hitting like, you know, 37 seconds before I'm in the box.
So whose bat are you using?
Remember Chris Trubey?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. So I got Chris Trubey's bat hanging up in my office next to the game ball.
That's so funny. Didn't he play with the Astros too, Chris Trubey?
He did. Yeah. That's who we were with at the time.
You were with Houston. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. I remember him. That's funny. I was going to say, relief pitchers, nowadays, would they have, I guess they wouldn't even have their own at-bat or own bats nowadays because they're never hitting. But back then, a lot of relief pitchers really had their own bats.
I think we got six bats because, you know, we had to be ready to bunt. And that was always my complaint is that, I mean, good grief. We had a bunting station, bunting drills every day of spring training.
Oh.
I mean, we would spend 30 minutes every day working on bunting.
For all the pitchers, for the relief pitchers and starters. Yeah.
It was complete eyewash. It made no sense. And I remember just, all the guys, not just me, but everybody was griping, like, why are we spending all this time bunting? We're never going to bunt. I did get one opportunity in my career to get up and sacrifice bunt, and I got it down.
You got it
So
down.
I
There
was
you go.
grateful for all that training at that point.
There you go. Well, we're grateful for you, Scott Leinbrink, for coming on Sports Spectrum again, for all the work you're doing with Get in the Game. It's a must-listen podcast. People need to go check it out. The idea of your show is about serving. It's very much in conjunction with what you're doing with Water Mission and how, we're all called to serve and give back in some way. And that's what I love about Get in the Game. I also love the work that you do with Water Mission. And again, the website, watermission.org. Thanks, Scott Leinbrink, for coming on Sports Spectrum. Always good to see you.
Yeah, good to see you, Jason. Thank you for what you do and appreciate your show and always a pleasure coming on here.
And many thanks to Scott Leinbrink for being here on Sports Spectrum. Again, watermission.org is the website. Go check them out and you can learn how you can get involved and provide safe water for 2.2 billion people that are in need of that safe, clean water. My wife and I are financial supporters of Water Mission. We believe in what they stand for. And obviously, we talked about the living water. That's what Water Mission's desire is, to not just give them clean water, but share the gospel of Jesus, which is the hope that all of us are in need of. So cool stuff there from Scott. Love the stories. I could talk baseball with him all day, and love what he had to say about his conversation with Dude Perfect as well. Make sure you subscribe to the Get in the Game podcast. That's part of Sports Spectrum's podcast network. I will put a link to that in the show notes. I'll put a link to the Apple podcast subscription and the Spotify podcast subscription for the show. But if you listen on another app, that's completely fine. But you can find Get in the Game everywhere podcasts are found. Scott Leinbrink is your host, and he has some pretty big names on his show. So definitely subscribe to that. It's a perfect complement to what this podcast is all about. And again, we appreciate Scott Leinbrink for being here today on Sports Spectrum. As always, as we close out the show, we want to remind you to click that follow and subscribe button on this episode, in case you haven't done that yet, on this podcast, to make sure that you don't miss any more conversations like today's with Scott Leinbrink. And also check out our website, sportspectrum.com, for all of our content, free articles and devotionals. There's testimonials on there, great video content, resources, even our Sports Spectrum store. It's all available right there at sportspectrum.com. Thanks for tuning in. We love you guys. Have a great rest of your day, and we will see you next time with another episode right here on Sports Spectrum.